Well, I'm assuming I've got you for this week and one more week, potentially. And there's this frustration I have in that I've got a whole quarter, but you're not going to be here the whole quarter. Many of you won't. And so I promise you, probably starting later this week, I'm going to post this material on aubeacon.com. And it'll be on the front page at the top. And if you wanted to follow the additional outlines and audio as you go home, that'll be available. As I've mentioned from the very beginning, I've been very excited about studying this material. It's given me some new insights into the necessity of developing the ability to discern deception and how Satan's great power is deception. And Satan has the world, but he doesn't have us. And so we're going to be studying the tactics that Satan uses. We're going to teach some things about how to detect deception. Now, I've also mentioned you can use this material in a much broader way. This material could involve every realm of deception in the world. And if you're going to make it in this life, if you're going to do business in this world, if you're going to have to interact with this society and have any success at all, you're going to have to learn how to think things through and make good judgments. We're all going to be deceived at times, but we often will be. And that hurts when that happens. It particularly hurts when it comes within brethren. But keep in mind, the Word of God equips us, teaches us, and God will be with us. There's a later lesson. It may be next week, next outline, but it'll be on this summer. But I'm going to go ahead and throw this at you now before we dive into lesson two. What is the greatest weapon we could develop to be able to be free from being captured by a deceiver and ended up destroying ourselves spiritually? What is the greatest thing that we could do? If you wanted a bottom line lesson where you can assure yourself that you would not be led astray to the destruction of your soul, what is the best thing that you and I can do to avoid being taken captive by a deceiver in the church? It's really simple. In Galatians 5, you have a list of two groups of attitudes. One is called the fruit of the Spirit, and the other is called the works of the flesh. If we could develop and make sure we're developing the fruit of the Spirit in our lives, and that we have a pure and honest heart, another way of describing it is that we seek justice and mercy, that we become very merciful people, but we want to find out what is true. If we would make sure we maintain our integrity, while we may be fooled for a while, we're not going to be taken advantage of to the point of our own spiritual destruction by the deceiver. And this is a future lesson. It's really, like I say, not even the lesson tonight. But I want to leave this with you because we were talking about discerning the deceiver and trying to figure out who one is. But the most important thing is that if you'll notice here, in how we can overcome the false teacher who divides brethren. Notice, it says in verse 14 of Galatians 5, "For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, beware lest you be consumed by one another." And by the way, the deceiver within the church wants to get you in verse 15. He wants to get you there. That's where he can take advantage of you and I. But now notice verse 16. "I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh." And then later on, it talks about the works of the flesh. And by the way, a lot of those is dealing with anger. But verse 22, "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law." The deceiver wins with us when we end up giving in to anger and bitterness and emotion and we stop thinking. If we will maintain a good heart, even though a deceiver may take us down the road a little bit, we can pull out of it. But the deceiver destroys people when he plants his own character within us. And that is going to be throughout this whole study. This is the way that we can make sure that we stay in fellowship with our God and that we stay away from the clutches of the deceiver. Let's do a little review, and then we may go to our homework. I don't know if anybody did additional research, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. But we go back to the premise last week. The Bible's filled with warnings to beware. Our Lord Jesus Christ, remember how He warned Peter, you know, beware, you know, Satan wants to sift you. And here He's warning us. He says, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. Now, what do you see in verse 15? They're coming to us in sheep's clothing, that's outward, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. How do you describe somebody like that? The person who appears outwardly one way, but they're inwardly something else. What's another Bible word for such a person? Hypocrite. Now notice, when I'm talking about deceivers, and I appreciate some of the discussion last week, I'm not talking about somebody who's sincerely mistaken and excited about something that he really doesn't understand, and he may deceive people, but not out of a bad heart, okay? That's still not a great thing to deceive somebody, but I think a good-hearted person will come to learn. But what I'm talking about tonight is somebody who the Lord describes as a hypocrite. And they have things going on within their heart that are completely out of harmony with the fruit of the Spirit that would be found within the works of the flesh. So now notice, how can I know that? Can I know what is in your heart? Well, I can't read a mind. And it's very true that there could be some difficulty in me understanding what's in your heart. Some of you say, only God can judge my heart. Well, let me tell you what Jesus said. If you keep reading, you will know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruits you will know them. Now let's analyze this just a little bit. Be merciful and just to every brother or sister in Christ. I don't want to make you a cynic. I don't want to make you fearful and suspicious of your brethren. But I can give you some warning flags to see. In this passage, I want to ask you something about judging someone by their fruits. Is that instantaneous that you can do that? What must happen in order for you to be able to see their fruits?
Spend time with someone. You have to spend time with someone.
A different what?
You have to spend time with
them. Yes, you got to spend time with them. Time. Time is the big thing. And so you may well have someone amongst you and associating with you that has this heart and you don't see it at first. But in time it will come out. And it will. And I want to show you why it will and how it will. I say this brokenheartedly. One of the examples I have in my mind of a man that became like this was very close to me. And he was not always like this. But he had disappointing things happen to him in the church. He also had a background, a family background, that made him vulnerable. But brethren can, in particular, go down the path of personal bitterness, and it eventually can make them, turn them into something very bad. They can literally try to burn down the church around them out of their anger. There's other reasons why people do these things. But, you know, when I was younger, I had no concept of this. I mean, honestly. And you guys probably don't either. Maybe you do. Have you ever seen this? Have you ever witnessed this? I hope you have. You know, sincerely. If you've been through a church that experienced that, that would be a very difficult thing. Now, maybe there's some people in your life you were that way, that you first thought they were great people, and then you got to know them and found out they lied and cheated you, and they did others. And there may be some experiences you have along these lines. But the hypocrite's a tough one. I do not want to lightly accuse another brother or sister of being a hypocrite. I want to keep emphasizing that. You don't come to these conclusions easily. You really don't want to believe that's the case. But notice again, Jesus warned about the devastating influence these kind of people can have upon brethren. Here he's talking to the disciples here in Luke 12:1. It says in the middle of verse 1, he says, he began to say to his disciples, first of all, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. Hypocrite can get away with it. And the hypocrite is dangerous when he has an agenda, okay? There are some hypocrites, they're not seeking to influence you, do anything with you. They just kind of want to go along for the ride and get some benefits. But there's another kind of hypocrite that's got an agenda, and if they can, they want to take you with them. And there's the danger. And Jesus points out, in time, notice what will happen. For there is nothing covered that will not be revealed, nor hidden that will not be made known. Therefore, whatever you have spoken in the dark will be heard in the light, and what you have spoken in the ear in the inner rooms will be proclaimed on the housetops. You see, Christians, we don't want to say one thing to one somebody and something to somebody else. We want to act on principle. And we don't have to worry about what lies we tell in order to cover up some other lies. You see, we want to be honest, but sometimes, particularly when bitterness or people become emotional, sometimes people lose sight of reality. They create their own reality, and they want to hurt some people. They want to go another direction. And the Pharisees were examples of that. I won't quote to you Matthew 23, but you can see the many passages where he basically says, you appear outwardly appear beautiful, but inwardly you're full of dead man's bones. Outwardly you appear righteous to men, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. So, as we started last week, because I'm trying to move ahead in this class of some concepts that give you something before you go home, we kind of examined how a hypocrite can act, how they can speak in code. And we're going to come back to that paragraph before we finish tonight. I gave you some homework on it. And so, the danger within the church is when somebody comes within and we don't know they're a hypocrite. We don't know they have an agenda. And I want to show you how they can affect you and I. We actually had a situation about 5-6 years ago within our student group. We had a situation very close to that, where students were being pulled aside in a small group and things were being planted and people were becoming angry. And so again, I, by the way, there's some things that maybe we're doing wrong, we may need to correct. I'm not against that. I'm not against saying that maybe we can do better. I'm not against people saying, hey, brethren, we've missed a passage of Scripture. We can apply it better. But what I want to talk to you about is where somebody is not open about that, but they're selective about who they talk to, what they say, and there's certain attitudes you've got to watch out for. Now, notice, again, the warning in Acts 20:29. Paul says, for I know this, after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. Also from among yourselves, men will rise up, speaking perverse things. Now notice this next statement, to draw away the disciples after themselves. Should we be concerned about that? Draw a 100-mile radius around Auburn, and I suggested to you last week, in the last 5-6 years, I would say 30 to 40% of the churches have had serious issues with this very thing. Where an individual came in, sometimes it's a preacher, sometimes it's somebody else. They get a group in the background. They get so angry that by the time the leadership finds out about it, whoop, they've started them a house church or they've divided and gone somewhere. I want to tell you, we want to trust our brethren. But if you begin to see a subgroup forming, when you begin to see somebody sharing bitterness and anger with you, making a lot of charges about people, but there's no attempt to solve problems, be careful. Watch out for that. And matter of fact, that's what Paul's telling them. Therefore, watch and remember that for 3 years, I did not cease to warn everyone night and day with tears. Now, hopefully, a good eldership will take care of those things. But it involves people communicating. We want to communicate with one another. We want to be open. We're not above rebuke. Yes, we may have made some mistakes. Maybe there are things we could change. But a good leadership will talk about it. We'll say, hey, let's do something about it. Be careful about the people in the background, where I call them the fellowship of the miserable. Rather than seeking to solve problems, they're recruiting people to be angry with them. And that is never a good situation. By the way, the same thing could be said of the home or the family. You know, you guys, I'm praying that to those that are seeking to be married, one day you'll be married and you'll have families, and families will have a history. Sometimes families have histories of not communicating. You oftentimes see depression or addiction issues, and they're very common, that go through a family. Oftentimes you'll see families that do this very thing. Rather than talk to somebody in the family about a problem, they hold it within. They talk about everybody but to the person that you know they need to talk to. And it creates a train wreck, alienation. I've been fairly shocked in my life to even see within my broad family associates of how bitterness planted and things like that can just create havoc, not just within the church, but within everyday relationships. Whether you're a business, whether you're a football team, whether you're a university, whether you're a nation, you know, the things I'm talking to you about are not good. But we're going to focus on the church. So now, let me give you some characteristics of the hypocritical deceiver. Psalms 36 is a fantastic verse to analyze the character. Remember, Jesus says they are ravenous wolves. I almost overlooked that when I first read that as a Christian. I have come to see it. Somebody read Psalms 36, 1 through 4 for me. If you raise your hand, you're willing to read tonight. Psalms 36, 1 through 4. All right.
Mortal within my heart concerning his transgressions of the wicked. There is no fear of God before his eyes, for he flatters himself in his own eyes. When he finds out his iniquity, when he hates the word of his mouth, the wickedness of deceit, he has ceased to be wise and to do good. He divides his wickedness on his bed, and he sets himself in a way that is not good. He does not abhor evil.
You know, it's interesting. Verse 2. Wow, that's a very interesting statement. He flatters himself in his own eyes. There are a lot of potential ways somebody can get to the point they don't want reality. But a lot of people do that. There's actually a disorder, and I'm not trying to be the pop psychologist, but I appreciate the analysis of the narcissist. That's a term that's more been used recently in terms of society, but I have definitely dealt with Christians that have had symptoms of being a narcissist. And by the way, you can be a faithful Christian and struggle being a narcissist, okay? You can recognize it and battle it. So I'm not saying that if you have these tendencies that you cannot be honest. You know, you've got to fight to be honest. But the narcissist who is out of control doesn't ever want to see their own faults. You become an enemy if you see their faults. Here's the listing. I just found this on the internet today. I've got quite a bit of material on this in a broader way. But the narcissist has a grandiose sense of self-importance. He lives in a fantasy world that supports their delusions of grandeur. In other words, the narcissist will always view every problem in light of how it impacts them. You would call them ego-centered. And if it doesn't impact them, they're not interested in it. And by the way, you're an interest to them only in how you impact them. And you're going to find them very not always alert to your needs unless they can praise you to get something from you. Number 3, they need constant praise and admiration. They have a sense of entitlement. Number 5, notice, they exploit others without guilt or shame. And then finally, frequently demeans, intimidates, bullies, or belittles others. Now, there are other ways that people become deceivers. But the narcissist, in the cases that I have personally dealt with, this is it. Where somebody becomes so concerned about how others view them that if you want to become their enemy, let them know that you see them for who they are, and they will throw you away. Back in Psalms 36, the problem that this person has is they cease to know God and they cease to have the fear of God before His eyes, and they do not abhor evil. Again, we can all tend to have a tendency toward narcissism. All of us do. All of us have a sense of we want to be praised. We want to view life as it serves us. So, you know, there is a natural sense we do that. But the narcissist, it becomes all about them. They no longer understand the viewpoints of others, the feelings of others, and they really, the idea of right and wrong, that is not important to them. It's more important of what they can get. And that is the heart, to me, of most hypocrites. The hypocrite can't stand to see who they are, can they? And so what they're going to do, they're going to be selective about who they bring around them. Could I tell you, you know how to keep from being a hypocrite? And your friends, somebody tell me. If you want to avoid hypocrisy, who should you make your friend? Somebody to be absolutely honest with you. If the only person you want to be around to date and marry is somebody who's just going to praise you, praise you, praise you, and never tell you what you need to know, you've not found the right person. It would be good to have somebody that praises you and loves you, but at the same time will take the 2x4 out and in love pop you between the eyes and say, you need to see something, okay? Seriously, I really mean this. If you and I will pursue people like that, we may have tendencies to go this other direction, but you see, we want to have integrity. We want to show justice, that is, accurately viewing God's will as it applies to me and others, and we want to pursue mercy. We're going to be merciful to others. To me, when I see my own faults and find forgiveness, I can be merciful to others. I don't have to be perfect before others. But when a person creates their own reality, oh my, that is not going to end well. And so, what you'll see with this person is lots of deceit. I'm going to read a few verses of Proverbs 26. Won't read them all, but we'll start in verse 22. It says, 23, we talks about stirring up strife. But verse 23, fervent lips with a wicked heart are like earthen well covered with silver dross. He who hates disguises it with his lips and lays up deceit within himself. When he speaks kindly, do not believe him, for there are 7 abominations in his heart. Though his hatred is covered by deceit, there's our class, his wickedness will be revealed before the assembly. What do you think of when you read about verse 26? Here's somebody that's a ravenous wolf. But what happens in time? By their fruits you shall know them. You're going to come to know them in time. Whoever digs a pit will fall into it. And he who rolls a stone will have it rolled back on him. One of the things you're going to find about the hypocritical deceiver, he's going to do damage. He's going to hurt others. He's going to divide others. He's going to poison others. But what happens in the end, verse 27, with that person over time? The mess that is in their heart, the bitterness that is in their heart, eventually comes back to bite who? What is the definition of bitterness? Anybody heard a good definition of bitterness? And I'm even speaking of a more humorous one. Bitterness is like drinking poison in order to try to hurt the other person. Do you know who ultimately pays the worst price for bitterness? The person who harbors it. That ravenous wolf, even though he may successfully gain a following and to successfully gain praise, if you build on bitterness, it's going to finally come back and destroy you and I. Please remember that. For your home, the worst thing you could do as a parent is to become bitter. Because if you plant bitterness in your children and those that you love, you're planting a cancer that you cannot control. And so again, as I'm dealing with this kind of deceiver, And they'll talk about grace, and they'll talk about love, and they'll talk about loving God and loving others. But if they have bitterness, one of the ways you can test their fruits is by looking at their disciples. And there, again, this takes time. If I had more time, I can tell you more about it. That word ravenous, by the way, and that's used in Matthew 7:15, it literally means vicious, ravenous, destructive like a wild animal, violently greedy, substantively a robber or a swindler. Okay. Yes. What's that?
You said you can tell their fruits by looking at their disciples.
Yes. They would display the works of the flesh, the anger and bitterness. Oftentimes, and this is a point I want to make, the real good deceiver is good at hiding it. You know, he smiles, he's got anger that we looked at in Proverbs. But guess what his disciples are probably not good at? Deceit. And I have found, when I've watched my friend go bad, and I was going, oh, he was very clever on the internet about planning stuff. He didn't know what he meant, but there was this snide aspect to it, almost a bitterness aspect to it, where he's poking brethren. But then there are some people that begin to follow him, and woo, they came out. They couldn't be deceptive as he was, and they would make statements, broad statements about churches of Christ, broad statements about doctrine and beliefs they've changed, very angry statements. One of these men I personally baptized into Christ 40 years ago. And he got pulled up in one of these guys, and you know what? I came to see what this other guy was doing by this one, and it all came out to be true. It all came out in the long run exactly that's where this guy was at. But see, the disciples that get pulled in and they're not used to this, they'll be a little more honest with you until they learn deception, and you'll see that anger. And what should we do when we feel like we've been hurt by another? We should talk to people, shouldn't we? That's the last thing these people want to do. Rather than fix a problem, they would rather be angry. And oftentimes what they'll do, they'll make broad generalities. They'll try to talk about churches in general. And normally this is somebody maybe 18 years old talking about what churches of Christ have done. And I'm going, how would you ever know that? You've hardly been a part of just a few churches. How do you know broadly what is happening within churches? You see, it's an emotional anger that I see. And again, in my case, there's some of these people I've known personally. Never had a bad cross word with them, but they got pulled into this private group. And then when I finally try to interact with them, I'm an enemy. And I'm going like, whoa, where did this come from? Let me give you a verse. Galatians 4. I'll skip ahead here. Hopefully not too far ahead. But Galatians 4. Yeah, here's a great verse. Here's another verse I didn't fully understand. But once studying deception, I'm going, oh, I understand this. Here there were people that came in and influenced people that Paul had converted. Notice what Paul said about what happened over time with the disciples of these people that were teaching what they did. Verse 16 and 17. Let somebody else read. Galatians 4, 16 and 17. Who would like to read? Okay. What translation you got?
New American Standard.
What's that?
New American Standard.
Okay, New American Standard, okay.
So after coming in, I tell you the truth, they eagerly seek you, not commendably, but they wish to shut you out so that you will seek them.
Okay. They want to shut you out. They want to exclude you that you may be zealous for them. Now notice, why did Paul become their enemy? He told them the truth. What does a hypocrite hate more than anything? To be told the truth. They become like their leader, you see. And so, I'm not saying people can't disagree with us, have studies, and say I disagree. But you know what honest people do? We'll talk to you about it. I have a conviction here. Let's study this. I'm not suddenly an enemy. We could talk. And that's a very big passion of mine. I want to listen to the other side. I want to talk honestly. We're talking about a person who is trying to create a corrupt heart that shuts the mind down. Paul was an apostle who loved these brethren. And finally he says, have I become your enemy because I tell you the truth? That is a bad place to be. And by the way, that happens and you get let off, Not many people come back. It's when you plant bitterness like that. There's a way to come back. Great question. Other questions? I promised you tonight that we would spend a little time on what we talked about last week. And I'll see if you'll have any more discussions about it. We had a wonderful discussion last week about analyzing language. I apologize, I don't have the same chart I had, because we outlined a lot of things that in this paragraph, and I'm not going to reread it for you. But we noted in this paragraph, and by the way, as it is in the outline, when you're listening to someone that is deceptive, again, we don't always know they're deceptive, but there is one brother was telling me about this particular this brother that he's talked about how there was a confusion about his meaning, that he would preach a lesson and he wasn't quite sure what he was saying. It could be taken two ways. And what I recommend doing when you're hearing somebody or reading somebody, when you hear a paragraph like you have in your outline, you need to try to find out what needs defining. You need to look at prejudicial language and how it's being used. You need to look at the problems that are raised, and are they specific enough for you to actually recognize the problem? And then defining words. And so last week when we looked at this paragraph, we pointed out that there was a ton of prejudicial language that was directed toward brethren and toward churches of Christ in general. We talked about prejudicial terms like shackles, and about the idea of being rigid, making up rules about not having a depth of commitment versus coming to have a depth of commitment. But as you read through all of this, what are the issues he's speaking of? And there's a lot of things we looked at here. I had one brother read this article and say, it's great. Again, from a certain perspective, this could be a great document. But on another side, there seems to be a prejudice directed toward brethren. And so again, if somebody spoke this or wrote this to me, the first thing I should do is what? If I've got confusion about what somebody has said, what's the first thing I should do?
Question.
Yeah, question. Go to the person. A good, honest person, and by the way, I've put out gobbledygook before. You know, sometimes I try to communicate, and it may be taken both ways. So I could have put out something like this, not intentionally. But ask the person. If the person's got a good heart, what should they do when you ask them questions? Yeah, they'll give you the definitions. I see what you're saying. But you know what? If you've got the hypocrite, and you have some ability to ask good questions, you know what may happen? You suddenly get anger thrown at you. What are you, a legalist? What do you mean to do? Or what are you suggesting? I've got some material later in this quarter. I'm going to show you some exchanges. That really changes. But to show you the tactics where somebody honestly says, hey, what do you mean by this? And they came back with boom, boom, boom. They actually got you off the topic by attacking you. Okay, did any of y'all do research, any further research on this document through the internet that gave you an idea of a greater knowledge of what this guy was talking about? If none of you did, that's okay. You now have the document. I recommend that you look at the term propositional Baconian. You got some chance to do it. If you know how to do research, you would get an idea of where he's going. But tonight, I don't want to dwell on that. You may find that an interesting study. And we'll later cover this in this class. Okay? One more thing as we talk about discussing, studying with one another. And we'll bring this out next week as well as you're here. Have you ever heard this statement made in politics? A crisis is a terrible thing to waste. How many of you ever heard that? You heard that? What does that mean in politics?
It means that you can come out and show that you have all these cares and interests and in all these people that you never cared about before.
You're caring, and your opponent is what? They're a demon. You know, you can take an issue and use it as a wedge. If you're trying to recruit people here and away from them, you take a problem and make it a wedge issue. Is that what we should do in the church? Within the church, what are we trying to do? What's our goal? To be united in love, to grow closer together. And you see, there's a way I can handle an issue to work out a problem, or I can take the same issue and I can create division. And there, if you want to see another fruit, look at how they handle problems. They will oftentimes, when you're dealing with a problem, try to get you mad at brethren and talk in very general terms about what churches of Christ are done or brethren have done. Watch out. There's a difference between the one who wants to bring us together in love and the one who's looking to draw away disciples. We'll develop that more next week. Thank you for your participation. Hope it's been interesting to you. And good luck on your finals.